Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls Media Roundtable. Today, we are spending the hour talking about Uncuffed, a storytelling project made by people behind bars in California prisons. Incarcerated producers are trained by a team of audio journalists from KALW, and those producers record interviews with other people incarcerated in Solano State Prison and San Quentin State Prison, and then they edit those stories for broadcast. Producers also record group conversations about the themes that emerge from each story. Uncuffed can be heard on KALW's daily news program Cross Currents, online at weareuncuffed.org, or in podcast players. There are six producers at each prison who contribute to and co-host Uncuffed. Hopefully later in the show, Brian Thames will join us from Solano State Prison and Greg Eskridge will join us from San Quentin. Here is a clip from inmates talking about what Uncuffed means to them.
Coming at you from Solano State Prison
and San Quentin State Prison,
this is Uncuffed.
Uncuffed is about telling our stories from our perspectives.
From the perspective of a person who hasn't had his story told.
On the show, you'll hear what it's like to be incarcerated.
From the minute you stepped in the building, you literally felt that you was kind of like on this other planet.
But really, what it's like to be a human being.
If I hate my dad, I hate myself. If I love myself, I love my dad.
For those of you who have been to prison and those of you who haven't, and for those of you who don't know anybody that's ever been in prison, whoever you are, we want you to get to know who we are.
We've got the mic now, and we're telling our own stories.
Uncuffed, from San Quentin and Solano State Prison and KLW Public Radio, subscribe now in any podcast player.
That was a clip from Uncuffed, a KALW audio project that gives a glimpse into prison life at San Quentin and Solano State Prison by providing a platform for prisoners to tell their own stories. And today we are joined by two of the KALW people, trainers, producers who work with these prisoners behind bars. Eli Wertschafter has been at KALW since 2015 when he was a member of the Audio Academy. Eli is now the head of KALW's programs in prisons and is the lead teacher at Solano State Prison. And Eli joins us in studio. Hi, Eli.
Welcome to the show. Hi, Rose. Good morning. Good to be here.
Great to have you. Nina Gensler-Debs is the director of KALW's program at San Quentin State Prison. Nina has been involved with KALW since 2012 and is now a freelance audio producer. And Nina also joins us in studio. Hi, thank you for coming in.
Hi, Rose. Good to be here.
Well, it's great to have both of you. I have to say, it was nice to be able to spend some time with this project rather than listening to it going from point A to point B. And it's really incredible, the stories that these men share. I have to say, as someone who interviews people, I love that the prisoners interview other prisoners.
Right.
Can you talk about what went on behind that decision?
Logistically, it would not be easy for us to go in and interview prisoners, and there's actually rules against that. So in a certain way, they have an ability and an access that just, in terms of prison rules, people on the outside don't have, that they can do interviews with each other. Also, we wouldn't be able to go in, you know, at separate times other than our classes and do these interviews. But fundamentally, that's not what this project is about. This is about both a training program where they on the inside learn how to make radio, as a arts program, as a sort of vocational program. It's also very much about the kind of show we want to make, where it is them talking about themselves in their own voices and getting to have these conversations that, I mean, we wouldn't even know the right questions to ask.
That's what really struck me, Nina, about listening to someone, for example, like Brian Thames interviewing one of his fellow inmates, friends, mm-hmm. about what life is like behind bars.
Yeah, I think that for me, I felt like I've been going in since 2013 or 14 in various capacities, and just being privy to these conversations, sitting at the table and feel like you get to actually be in the room is just a totally different type of feel, type of conversation, type of vulnerability than I have ever actually really seen in any sort of coverage about incarceration, about the people who have incarcerated loved ones, any sort of that. So I think that we all felt, particularly the producers we work with both at San Quentin and at Solano, that encapsulating it fully in their own experience, in their own words, in their own terms, would produce something that was going to be far deeper reaching and more real and more meaningful and impactful than anything we were going to be able to do.
And, I mean, the topics are just, there's so many. But for example, Brian Thames produced a story about Francisco Magana called Forgiving a Violent Mother.
Right.
Such an amazing piece. And then he also interviewed Raymond Jones, who is often debilitated by depression and sometimes doesn't want to shower, eat, or even think. And in that piece, Brian said, you know, I've also been depressed, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
Right. It's just personal on a level that we would never be able to do as outside producers. These guys are willing to go there. They're willing to talk about the most vulnerable topics, and they're willing to make it personal. And I love about a lot of these interviews, including those ones that you just mentioned that Brian did, that it is a conversation. It's not just one person telling their story. It can be a bit of a back and forth. So that we hear how a certain issue plays out in both of their lives.
So let's talk about how this happened. This project builds upon the training and audio production KALW has done inside prisons since 2012. And since then, KALW has aired over 60 stories produced inside the walls. And the work has been recognized by a number of organizations, including the Society of Professional Journalists. So Nina, do you want to take this one first? How did this even begin?
Yeah, well, I mean, to clarify, I was actually not there at the very beginning of us going in. But Holly Kernan, back when she was here, she has a connection to CDCR. Her cousin Scott Kernan is involved with CDCR. And when we started, we were going in. It was not nearly the robust program it is now. It was sort of going in when we can. We didn't have any funding. But there were a group of phenomenally passionate and motivated people in there who wanted to learn radio and wanted to learn journalism. And so as the years have gone by, you know, also the media center at San Quentin, they have a newspaper, they have a video program called First Watch, Ear Hustle, obviously. And so that has also grown more robust. And I think as we've grown, that there's been more interest also in just radio and podcasting in general. And so then we got more funding. Now we have a much more formalized training program where producers come in every Friday and we teach them various parts of audio production and journalism basics. And then they will record these conversations. So it was sort of this long process to get to where we are.
And I should say it's the California Arts Council that provides the funding for the program now. So there's a program called Arts and Corrections from the California Arts Council, a state agency. I think it first started in the 80s or 90s and then disappeared during the sort of California budget crisis. It was brought back a couple years ago, and through that we've been able to fund the work we do, the training program we do at San Quentin, and add a new training program at Solano. It's really thanks to that program that we're able to have such a robust audio training program right now.
Mm-hmm. So walk us through some of the process involved when you create this relationship with the prison. What happens from there?
I started out at Solano Prison, and we started from scratch there. We didn't have a program. It was a lot of meetings, a lot of phone calls, visits to the prison, trying to figure out where we would work, trying to figure out things that would be very simple if we were doing it in any other context were really complicated. Like, how does audio transfer from one computer to another? At this point, we don't have flash drives in there. A public information officer needs to listen to all the audio both coming in and coming out of the prison. So if we want them to listen to some stories to hear what, you know, well-produced radio sounds like and to have a discussion in the class, a critique of whatever podcast or radio show they're hearing, that audio needs to be cleared on the way in, and anything we produce needs to be cleared on the way out. So there's just a lot of logistics to figure out. We have to explain to a lot of different people what this project is about and what it might take from them. We've been, I think, really fortunate that at both prisons, the staff have been eager to help this project and enthusiastic, seeing the kind of change it makes in the people who are training and also in the people who are interviewed. So after months of setup at Solano, we started doing weekly classes there. And it was another, I think, almost 5 or 6 months before those first pieces got on the air, because we had to build all this training in making radio from the ground up. And for some guys, they haven't used a computer. There's mm-hmm. been guys who are in there since the late 70s. You know, some of them have had some computer training while in prison since then, and some have not. So they really had to develop those skills. And that was kind of an unexpected thing for me, that, like, I thought we were doing a radio training program. A lot of it is just basic computer literacy, but that's so valuable as well.
What are some of the questions the men ask when they first use the computer and learn about all of this technology? I mean, Brian Thames, again, Solano State Prison, we're hoping that he can call in. He's been incarcerated since 1994?
If that's what his bio says, yeah.
And they don't have any access to technology?
So at San Quentin, what they'll have is they have these sort of like electronic kind of keyboard type things that have this sort of like very narrow digital screen that they can type on. That's like, for example, what San Quentin News and newspaper use, and they can use those for papers. But other than and also at San Quentin, at least, you know, there's very specific rules about when you can use computers, and you have to be monitored in certain ways and certain times by certain levels of staff or people who come in. So the actual access to the equipment is very, very limited as well, which means that you're only getting really the training on how to use the computers when you're in there. You don't get the practice time so much otherwise.
How do you decide what men are going to be involved in this program?
That decision's primarily made on the side of the prison administration, kind of handpicking people who are going to be responsible in the program. I think it's kind of varied from instance to instance and institution to institution. We like to spread the word and let everybody know that this program is going on. And at the same time, we want to make sure that the people in it are really going to be dedicated to the program.
Joining us now from Solano State Prison is Brian Thames. Hi, Brian.
Hello.
Hi, thank you so much for calling in. This is Brian Thames from Solano State Prison. Brian has been incarcerated since 1994. He was sentenced to life in prison, but he's eligible for parole, and he's been in this training program at Solano since last April. Brian, thank you so much for calling in.
Absolutely. You're welcome.
Well, Brian, I have to say, you know, I've been a longtime journalist, and I just really enjoyed listening to your pieces. Can you talk about, first of all, how did you become introduced to the Uncuffed program?
Well, actually, I got lucky. You know, I know the difference between skill and being fortunate. I was fortunate that I knew someone who was, I guess, for lack of a better term, putting a team together. And he decided that I would probably be one of the people that would be good for the program. And he didn't give me a lot of details beforehand, but I trusted him. And it ended up being the Uncuffed program, which it used to be called the Solano Storytelling Project initially.
And talk about what it's been like for you, Brian, to be in this program and to interview your fellow inmates and your friends and learn so much about their lives.
Oh, my God. Well, you know, again, I hate cliches, but it's really been a roller coaster because things have been happening with me and with my interviewees, but things have been happening with me emotionally that, number one, I didn't expect, and number two, I kind of wish weren't happening. For instance, there have been some interviews on more than one occasion where I got emotional when certain things were being discussed by the person that I was speaking to, and I didn't want to get emotional, and one of the guys, he's a friend of mine, and this was the one about an abusive mother and forgiveness, forgiving an abusive mother. And I stopped him during the interview, and I pointed at him. I said, man, I told you not to do that to me, man. Don't do that. Because he also got broken up. You know, he got emotional also. So, you know, really, go ahead.
I listened to this piece. This was the story that the interview you did with Francisco Magana called Forgiving a Violent Mom.
Yes.
And so Francisco said that as a child, he was afraid of his mom. She would beat him, and he's carried the pain with him for the rest of his life. And in the interview, he really opened up about his relationship and the mom who raised him. He shared a lot of personal information with you.
Yeah, and the thing about it is he told me pre-interview that he had not spoken about this with anyone for years. I mean, since he was very young, and then certainly afterward, he said he hadn't gone to the depth that he went to when he and I spoke. So I felt, I mean, I really felt privileged to have him open up to me like that. I mean, because I'm the same as him. I'm no different than him. I'm just another person,
right.
You know?
Has Francisco listened to this piece?
Yes, he did have an opportunity to listen to it. And he said a lot of family started contacting him, friends started contacting him, And some of his family members said to him, according to what he told me, some of his family members said to him, we didn't know you felt that way. And others said, we didn't know all that happened. For instance, I know that you're familiar with the story, the one situation where he alleges that his mother, and I have no reason to disbelieve him, that his mother tied him to a tree. And then it wasn't spanked. I mean, he used the word whipped and beat, but she beat him for whatever reason. And some of the family didn't know about that. And so they were crying, you know, talking to him about it. And this is years and years and years later.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Wow. It's such an amazing experience. I mean, what are you hearing from others about the power of listening to these stories and the power of sharing their own stories?
Well, I'll give you an example, if you don't mind. I'll give you an example of something else to respond to that. You may be familiar with another story that I did, that I produced, and it was called Friends with a Skinhead. I know that some people expressed a bit of doubt about whether or not a skinhead and I had actually become friends in a prison setting. And the reality is, people that had questioned that, they would see me coming from work, and I'm going back to the building, and this very same person, his name is Gary Peterson, his nickname is Midnight, and all of this information is on the story. He will come up to me and put his arm around me and ask me how my day was and walk at least a third of the way back to the building with me, you know, just talking, just seeing how my day went. And he would do this regularly. And it might sound like nothing, because average people do this on the streets. They ask about each other's day. In prison, you have particular politics, and, you know, you can't be chummy and, you know, sort of wrapped up like that in the way that Midnight and I would be. And so when people saw he and I walking and talking, they started to believe, you know, like, wow. And I got a lot of guys that would come to me and sort of talk about, I don't even know what story I want to do, but I want to do something. So because of these stories, people are affected, and they just want to talk. They just want to share. And I'm almost thinking that some people just want to vent.
Wow.
Sometimes I feel like a psychologist almost.
Do you feel, Brian, like it's brought you all closer together?
Well, I'm certain of it. I'm certain of it because there are stories even right now that I won't speak of because they make me emotional just to think about them. But prior to doing or having done some of these interviews, I don't want to say that I was jaded, but I would say that I was a bit less understanding and accepting of the true humanity of other people. It was almost as if I thought that I had a certain humanity, but others didn't. And when I start getting these stories and people sharing and, like, being completely open, it just, you know, it started breaking me down. Not in a bad way, in a good way. You know, it just really started breaking me down, and I know it's doing that for other people. You know, and people are coming saying, look, man, I've been hearing. My family's been listening to it. My friends have been listening to Uncuffed, and I'd like to talk to you, you know. And most of the time, they don't pitch a story. Most of the time, it's just, I'll figure out a story.
Mm. It's amazing to hear you say that, Brian, because you made me think about how people on the outside are so judgmental. Do you receive any letters from people on the outside who you don't know who've heard Uncuffed and how they've been affected by this?
I've gotten snail mail. We've also gotten mail through some of our KALW partners from the streets. They'll print out some of the messages and they'll bring messages to us. And it's largely positive. It's largely positive, but we requested, and when I say we, I mean the Uncuffed Originals. Originals meaning that Solano is where Uncuffed began. It didn't begin anywhere else. It began at this prison. But we've asked for messages that may not be so flattering to our position, because we want to know the whole picture. We want to know what people really think, you know. And people on the streets, they've used some really strong words and strong sentiments in favor of Uncuffed and listening to it. Just recently, as you might be aware, the New York Times posted something about Uncuffed as a must listen to. And I think it was today.
Yeah,
posted something.
I did see that. How did that make
you familiar with that?
I did see that story. How did that make you feel when you learned about that?
Well, hell, I mean, that made all of us feel great. I mean, and that's probably an understatement because, you know, for me and for my brothers, when I say my brothers, I mean my fellow coworkers and the people that we interview, it's not about some measure of fame. It's nothing like that. It's we really want to put a human face to the men that are here in prison because we are not necessarily our worst crime. Nobody's trying to do an interview and saying, hey, I'm innocent of this or that, or hey, I'm not such a bad guy. If you did something, you did it. That's not what these stories are about. But the stories are to let the people know, meaning the rest of society know and be aware if they choose to be made aware that there are threads to our lives that are intertwined. There are threads to our lives that are the same as the threads in their own lives. I mean, we're one big blanket of humanity, and the threads are the same. You know, there are little details that differ, but the threads, they're essentially the same. We have the same lives. We have the same feelings. We have the same experiences and responses to things. You know, and we feel, you know, we're people. Hmm. We're people, and some of us have made horrible decisions, but we're people.
Well, I was going to ask you, Brian, how has this experience allowed you and others to really reflect and look at your lives and just think about, you know, how you ended up in prison with such long sentences?
Well, again, I want to speak personally first, and then maybe possibly I'll be able to make a general statement. For me, there's a lot that I have done in my life. I'm not one of those people who says, well, I live without regrets. That's, for me, that's absolutely ridiculous. I do live with plenty of regrets. I regret a lot that I've done. And other men have expressed that to me outside of the interviewing process. But again, we're not our worst mistake. We're not our worst crime. And I tend to regularly reflect just on my life in general. And this comes in large part because of the process, because of the opportunity that I've been given by KALW, the arts. Whoever has a hand in making this possible, directly or indirectly, I'm grateful because it has caused me to reflect and others to reflect much deeper about my life and our lives than I think that we probably would not have done if not given this opportunity. I mean, there's always reflection, but this is like deep. You know, it's like looking at every other person is almost like looking in the mirror. You know, it's like we're the same, you know. I mean, dudes are in here crying, talking to each other. I mean, we're laughing at stuff together. You know, we're enjoying each other's company. You know, we're becoming less judgmental. You know, and a lot of this is in large part to Uncuffed, you know, and the whole process and the stars that brought it together. And I'm more grateful than anybody could imagine.
Brian, you are up for parole. I'm wondering, in our final minute, what do you expect will happen, and when do you expect that will happen?
Well, I am up for parole February 11th. I go to the board. I don't know if expectation for me is the correct word, but what I think I would like to happen is I would like to be found suitable at that time, and I do think that at this time I am suitable. I went to the board previously, August 9th, 2018, and the commissioner and deputy commissioner at that time, in retrospect, I feel like they did the right thing by not finding me suitable at that time, because in that short period of time, I have learned so much more about myself. I've learned so much more about tools that I need, because one of my things has been, in my past, has been anger and aggression. I've been really bad with that in my past. I've been impulsive in my past, and I didn't have the tools. I didn't even know that there were tools that I can use. I only knew one way to respond to things. Now I don't respond. I make choices. And I've learned a lot, believe it or not. I give a lot of credit to Uncuffed, but I give a lot of credit to the LTOP programs and the in-building self-help programs. And I think with everything that I've learned and that I've shared and that I continue to learn, I think that I should have a very good chance of being found suitable to reintegrate with society.
Wow. Well, Brian, we'll be thinking about you, and we would love to have you on the show when that happens.
You got it.
Thank you so much for joining us.
I appreciate you greatly. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. That's Brian Thames. He has been incarcerated at Solano State Prison since 1994. He was sentenced to life, but he's eligible for parole. He says when he gets out, he plans to rescue two Great Danes. And you can find Brian's work with Uncuffed at yourcallradio.org. And joining us now from San Quentin is Greg Eskridge, an award-winning journalist and a founding member of San Quentin Radio, where he serves as a facilitator and a mentor. Greg's stories have aired on KALW's Cross Currents, on Life of the Law, and on Crooked Media. He co-produced Life of the Law's live storytelling event, Stand Up San Quentin, which won a local Emmy with KQED. Greg is pursuing a college degree and is facilitator of many self-help groups.
Your telephone number will be monitored and recorded.
And as a journalist, Greg's goal is to give incarcerated people a platform to express themselves and give an accurate account of prison life. Greg is 46, and he has been in prison for 25 years. Hi, Greg. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you. I'm so glad this worked out. Greg, your background is amazing. The journalism work you do is incredible. How did you connect with Uncuffed?
Well, actually, I started connected with Uncuffed through San Quentin Radio. We started this program back in 2012, and then KOW expanded and wanted to do a program, a training program with Solano, and that's when the name Uncuffed came about, and so we partnered up with them, and that's how it pretty much started.
And Greg, as a journalist, I mean, you really want to give the public an accurate account of prison life, and I wonder if you can elaborate on that, because as you know, there's such a needed conversation about what's called prison reform, but I feel like in those stories, we don't often get to know what really goes on inside. So can you talk more about that?
Absolutely. Yeah, that was the main reason why I wanted to do journalism. Basically, you know, when I first got to San Quentin, I got a part of San Quentin Radio, and I would see guys walking around. I would see guys carrying folders, and I would see guys going in and out of groups, going to self-help groups, going to college and changing their lives. And I said to some of my buddies, I said, man, see, that's the story that the public doesn't get to hear. I think the public gets to hear about a lot of negative things that are going on in prison. And I was telling myself, I said, man, we need to change that narrative. You know, because there are some guys in here who, albeit have committed some crimes and are trying to rehabilitate themselves and trying to become better people. And that's what's going on around me in San Quentin. And so I wanted the public to be able to hear that, to be able to see what that looks like, to be able to see that the men in here are capable of being redeemed.
I mean, Greg, when you read the bios of all of you who are involved in Uncuffed, I mean, your bio is incredible, pursuing a college degree and a facilitator of many self-help groups. Chanthan Bun was born in Cambodia, and he immigrated to the U.S. His passion is to help at-risk kids and the immigrant community understanding the traumas that their family has gone through. He's been incarcerated for 23 years. I mean, all of these bios of all of you is amazing. And I was talking, you know, with our producer Malihe earlier, and we both said, why are these guys still behind bars? Look at the incredible work that they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, that's, you know, as far as being behind bars still, you know, it's that's something that I don't have any control over, obviously. You know, we come in this place, we committed the crimes that we did, and we're basically here to try to be better people and try to prepare ourselves in the event that we ever do get a chance to get out in society. And so, but until that time comes, we're just trying to be the best people that we can be. We're trying to stay positive, and we're trying to motivate other guys who have gone through, like, similar situations that we may have been through, like with childhood trauma and things of that nature. We want not just ourselves to get on back on the right track, but we want everyone that we're around to get back on that right track so we can be better citizens and be productive if we ever get a chance to be back out there in society again.
Can you tell us what resources are available at San Quentin for people who do want to deal with trauma and other things that they faced as a child?
Okay, so we have several self-help groups that deal with that, with childhood trauma. We have a group called KidCat, which is called Creating Awareness Together. That is a group that teaches you about environmental influences to masculinity, about communication. It basically takes you back to your past. We evaluate your past and your present and your future. There's also a great group that I was a part of called GRIP, which is Guiding Rage into Power, which is an emotional intelligence group that really just touches you, keeps you in touch with your childhood and how anger and how violence played a part in our lives growing up, and how we were hurt at one point and we became the same people that hurt us by committing our crimes. And it just teaches you to restore yourself and try to restore your community.
We're speaking with Greg Eskridge. He's joining us from San Quentin. He's an award-winning journalist, founding member of San Quentin Radio, and he produces pieces for Uncuffed, which you can find at yourcallradio.org. Greg, can you talk about the power of interviewing other inmates and other friends who are behind bars?
Oh, yeah. Well that's one of the beauties of being in here, because you have a lot of guys who initially do not want to speak for various reasons. You know, in prison there's a culture of masculinity and guys who kind of haven't really worked through a lot of issues in their lives, so they're really uncomfortable with speaking about certain issues. But the beauty about myself and the guys who work with me, you know, we've taken a lot of self-help groups and I've been in journalism for a while, so it's amazing to see a guy that's quiet. And you get him to talk, and he starts to open up, and he starts to believe in what he's talking about. He starts to believe in the power of his own voice. And it's amazing just to see that transformation, because I see it a lot of times. You know, a guy sit down and he'll pour his whole soul out. And obviously it's based on trust. You know, we built a trust with our organization down here. And so a lot of guys know that what stays in here is going to, you know, it's going to stay inside this room. We're going to produce great pieces. You know, we're not going to make them look bad in any way. You know, it's just about, you know, getting their story out and giving them a chance to finally have their voices heard. So it's wonderful to see a person just open up in front of you, and there's power in that. Because especially when the guy has, when the story airs and you get a chance to say, like, hey, man, you know, your story's going to air on whatever date, and that guy gets a chance to tell his family. And it's just a proud moment for not just him but his family as well.
Hmm. I listened to a number of the pieces you did, and one of them that was really powerful is you interviewed fellow inmates about how they cope with death from the inside. For people who are incarcerated, it's hard to find a space to grieve. And, I mean, it's really intense to think about this. There's no funeral, there's no family, there's no friends. And some of the guys you interviewed who've been in there for so long have lost so many loved ones.
Yeah. That's one of the saddest. That's one of the saddest stories I've done. But it's in the reality in this place. Guys spent a lot of years in this place, and their health fails, and they pass away. And then for guys who are or people's family members pass away, and for us in here, you know, it's basically just us. You know, we have each other. You know, they do. You know, the institution does offer counseling if a person is not mentally feeling well. He can go seek counseling. But for the most part, guys just come to each other. You know, I had a friend of mine just the other day that said his family member passed away, and you know, it's actually his mother. And so, you know, I never know what to say to a person who loses their mother. You know, I still have my mother with me, and that's one of the scariest things to ever get that news. And so I just lend myself my ear to this person and just let him just talk. You know, whatever he needs to say, I just let him say it. And that's just pretty much all we can do in here. It's sad. Yes, like you mentioned, there is no funeral to go to. There's really no proper way of grieving. There's really no way of connecting with family. But, you know, I encourage guys to just find somebody that you know and just, you know, and just that you trust and just talk to them, you know, and hopefully through the talking and through the that way you'll be able to find some type of healing in that situation.
Greg, before you came on, we were talking to Brian Thames at Solano State Prison, and he said that when the men he interviews listen to the piece, it has such an amazing effect on that man's life, and in some cases the family members listen and they're learning new information about something that happened years ago or decades ago. What has your experience been with people listening to the pieces you produce?
That is so true. I know one guy, I did a story about, he actually reconnected with his daughter. And it was a daughter that he had been estranged from, hadn't seen her in a long time, really didn't have any contact with her. But through his story, he got a chance to talk about his life and how you know, he made a lot of mistakes in his life and how he was sorry about certain things in his life. And his daughter came back into his life. And every time I hear that, that's the reward for me. You know, because me personally, that was my reward when I got my first story out. And I got a chance to call my family and say, "Hey, I have a story getting ready to air on the radio. Check it out." And then the response I got back from them was beautiful, because the last time I left the streets 25 years ago, my family had a pretty much a negative image of me. But for them to hear me doing something positive on the radio, that was mind blowing for them. And so that just made me proud, you know, not just as a reporter, but as someone that I was able to be like a proud son, a proud brother, a proud family member to my family. So it's very, very powerful when you get a chance, when your family gets a chance to see a different side of you that they never seen before.
I just want to ask you one more question. Given the work you do with Uncuffed, what are your thoughts about overall media coverage of prisons? Because it's getting so much attention today.
I think it's wonderful. I think it's time for the narrative of surrounding prisoners to change. I think there are a lot of guys in here who are seeking redemption and who are really on that right path. So it's very nice to see prison getting the proper light that it deserves instead of the negative light. You know, so I think we're in a really good place right now. I think, especially in California, I think California is making some adjustments. They're trying to do some things with social justice, and they see there's a need. And I'm very proud right now. This is a good time for us inside of prison.
Will you be up for parole anytime soon, Greg?
Well, I don't necessarily have a parole date right now. I'm still waiting as of right now.
Hmm. Well, we'll be thinking about you, and thank you for your great work. That's Greg Eskridge. He was joining us from San Quentin. Greg is an award-winning journalist and a founding member of San Quentin Radio, where he serves as a facilitator and a mentor. His goal as a journalist is to give incarcerated people a platform to express themselves and give the public an accurate account of prison life. Greg Eskridge has been in prison for 25 years. And he is 46 years old. We're going to take a quick break. Coming up after the break, we will be joined again by Eli Wertschafter, who is the head of KALW's programs in prisons and is the lead teacher at Solano State Prison, and Nina Gensler-Debs, who has been involved with KALW since 2012, and she's director of KALW's program at San Quentin State Prison. On today's Media Roundtable, we are talking about Uncuffed. It's an incredible storytelling project made by people behind bars in California prisons. We'll be back after this.
You're listening to Your Call on Local Public Radio, KALW. There is some distortion in today's show, but there's nothing we can do about it from a technical standpoint at this point, so do not adjust your radio and do bear with the broadcast. We get support from KLW listeners like David Heron of Richmond and John Fontana of San Francisco. Thank you for being listener supporters of Local Public Radio, KALW.
This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today we are spending the hour talking about Uncuffed, a storytelling project made by people behind bars in California prisons. And I hope you can take time to listen to some of these pieces. Uncuffed can be heard on KALW's daily news program, Cross Currents. You can hear it online. WeAreUncuffed.org. Be sure to follow them on social media. You can also download the podcast. Today, we are joined by Eli Wertschafter, who's been at KALW since 2015 when he was a member of the Audio Academy. He is now the head of KALW's programs and prisons and is the lead teacher at Solano State Prison. Nina Gensler-Debs is director of KALW's program at San Quentin State Prison. She's been involved with KALW since 2012 and is now a freelance audio producer. So did anything in those conversations, and thank you so much for setting those up, did anything in those conversations stand out for either of you, Nina?
It's just so great to be able to hear those voices outside of being in there. It's something I wish could happen more and more often.
Actually, to that point, can I ask you?
Sure.
So we do shows about prisons a lot,
mm-hmm.
and there are great people doing documentaries, writing books. We have former prisoners on. How hard or easy is it if we wanted to try to bring on prisoners on a regular basis?
So it's kind of funny in that the rules are you aren't allowed to reach out to the – my understanding is that you aren't allowed to reach out and be like, hey, I would like to interview Greg Eskridge. But if you say, I would like to interview someone about restorative justice practices or something, you can then write someone, come in and visit them, set up a time, and then it sort of depends on how you want to do it, right? If you want to actually come in and interview them, that's a whole process. You have to get approved, da-da-da. But if the person in question, incarcerated person in question, wants to call out, they can call out from – they can sort of sign up for a time, and there's no restriction on content that's not – I mean, other than the monitoring you just heard on the call, that is not monitored. So that is probably the easiest way to do it, is if you can find a way to sort of set up, and then they can call out and call you, and you have these 15-minute increments. Otherwise, it becomes substantially trickier to try and get access.
Did anything stand out for you in the conversations, Eli?
Well, it's so great for me to just listen to them talk about the impact of the program, because we're – each of us visits the prisons where we work just once a week, and it's always a really busy time of teaching a lesson and doing a lot of editing and like sharing a lot of information about, you know, things that are happening with the radio program, because we can't really communicate so much over the course of the week. So to actually pause and get to listen to what the impact of the program is for Brian and for Greg is very powerful for me, and just a great reminder of, you know, even if no one else heard this work, the value of those interviews in the lives of the people who do them is tremendous. And the fact that it gets out makes it exponentially more powerful.
Mm-hmm. And it was really powerful to hear Brian talk about interviewing Francisco Magana,
right,
and saying that his family members did not know what happened so many years ago.
Yeah. I mean, what incredible courage for Brian to do that interview, and especially for Francisco to want to do that interview. And, you know, we experience that as mm-hmm. reporters sometimes, that like someone will talk to the media and to the public, you know, who before they've talked to their own family. But especially in this context, it's an amazing act of courage, and I think transformative, because, you know, sometimes family members don't know the right questions to ask. And in this space, when they're talking to their peers know the right questions to ask, and they may feel more, they feel confident that the person who's responsible for editing that story and for getting it out and for asking the questions is going to do it in a responsible way.
We try to do our best bringing on former prisoners and, you know, talking to so many different people, Michelle Alexander, people who are doing really amazing work out in the community. But to hear from guys who are still behind bars is so rare, and I think it's so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other projects like this, do you know, around the country? It seems like this should be emulated in as many places as possible.
The best example is Ear Hustle, mm-hmm. The podcast produced out of San Quentin, which also has its roots in KALW setting up the radio program at San Quentin.
Colorado, right?
In Colorado, and there's now a new program that's hosted by someone on the outside. I think she's an artist who works in prisons, as well as a male and a female prisoner in Colorado. And they do interviews with both with other incarcerated people and people from the outside. it seems to be a growing, you know, a small but growing field because...
I think there's certainly lots of interest in places.
There's a lot of interest. Mm-hmm. And but it's also just like radio is simpler than video.
Right.
And it's, at least for me, more emotionally impactful than reading someone's writing.
Mm-hmm.
And especially since the visuals of prison can be so dehumanizing that we're listening to their voices and we can just imagine them as, you know, a friend or a brother or a parent or a colleague. I think that adds to the power of doing this as radio.
Mm-hmm. And as journalists, what changed for you when you were able to actually go inside and work directly with the men? Because it's one thing to read a book or watch a documentary and write about prison reform. It's a completely different experience when you're actually able to go inside.
I did not report on criminal justice exactly. I was an immigration reporter here for a while, and hearing, you know, one of the people you mentioned, Chanton Bun, if and when he gets out, will be deported directly back to Cambodia. So, you know, hearing the sort of different side of those issues, just of issues I've reported on, was interesting. And I think that also just considering the rules by which I and I know other journalists sort of like do our trade, and safety and respect and making space, about how those can just be and feel very different in the context of a place where you go to sleep every night with the people that you are reporting on, you know, and you wake up and you see them every day, and there is no escaping that. And there are all of the issues of the intersection of the fault lines of our existence, you know, like across race and gender and identity, and that those stakes are very different for journalists in who are incarcerated in different ways than they are for someone like me, you know, who goes home at night and gets up in the morning and then goes to work. So I've really, I think, reframed sort of some of my ideas and understanding about what it means to do this work and be a journalist, how much that becomes part of who you are in a different way, I think, inside behind bars.
What about you, Eli?
There's so much I could say. I mean, really, prisons are a parallel universe, of which I've only seen a very small sliver. Mm-hmm. So I can only speak to what I've seen. Compared to the stereotype, one of the most striking things is that really, like, at least in California, a lot of the people who are in prison are middle-aged or elderly, and particularly In the lower security level prisons where we're able to work, a lot of the population is quite old, and they're not the people they were when they may have committed violence. They're people who have spent 20, 30, 40 years reflecting and making art and having conversations.
Mm-hmm.
So the very first time I went into prison was San Quentin, not where I do radio work at Solano, but I first visited San Quentin to do Jewish services there. And I felt like I was walking into a monastery. It's like the level of intention and thoughtfulness and kindness that was being displayed was amazing. And that's not everywhere, and I've only been in a couple places. But just to know that exists changes your whole outlook.
Mm-hmm. What strikes you about the questions you are asked about this project and other forms of media?
I think Eli and I have talked about this a lot in terms of like considering a reframing of how we think about it, you know, like how can we be a part of, I think, what feels very deeply important to both of us, which is this is not about us at all in any ways. We are there as a tool to be useful and of service to people who are making this incredible content under really difficult circumstances. And, you know, it's obviously hard when you hear our voice and you're talking to us and asking us questions. And I think it's a complicated thing to struggle with. But I think that asking from the perspective of how are they making this content, what it's like for them, what are the circumstances under which it will get better, it will get farther, as opposed to sort of framing it in terms of what it's like, for example, for us to go in there, I think feels pretty important to me, because there are lots of people you can ask about what it's like going into prison who all have different experiences, and that may or may not matter or apply so much. And that's not what, at least what we're doing, is about at all. It's about building as much space as possible for these voices, for this narrative. Well, not narrative singular, many narratives, right? That's the whole idea. It's not a singular narrative. And just making sure that nuance and depth can really shine through as much as possible wow, they have such limited access to actually being able to respond to these things themselves.
Yeah, I'd agree. It's all about keeping the focus on them, the spotlight on them. Probably the most frustrating question to get asked is, are you scared going in? Which is an understandable question, but like, I have so much power in that space compared to the people we work with. I don't feel fear, but it just speaks to what people's perceptions and stereotypes are and this different narrative that's set up about what prisons are like. And obviously there is violence in prisons and there are more violent prisons than the ones we work in. But a volunteer working in a prison is in a very safe place.
Mm. What is next for Uncuffed? What are you excited about next?
Ooh, I don't know if we'll be able to share. we're soon to wrap up our first season, and then I think we're going to go back to the drawing board and figure out what worked, what didn't work, how can we improve our processes. This was a big experiment. We're going to have a lot of conversations with the producers and find out what they want and how we can make it better.
Yeah, I'm excited for those conversations. I'm just really interested in continuing to probe and understand how can we have these conversations that make you feel like you're really in the room. I think for me, that's been the most powerful privilege of being there, is feeling like I actually get to be a part of these and listen to these and sort of soak up all this wisdom and vulnerability and kindness and courage that I see on display all the time. And I think that I just, like, for me, the focus is figuring out how do we just, like, continue to make those feel the way it feels to be there. And yeah, so we'll see.
Well, huge respect to both of you for this incredible work. Thank you so much for coming in. Nina Gensler-Debs is director of KALW's program at San Quentin Prison, and Eli Wertschafter is the head of KALW's programs and prisons and is the lead teacher at Solano State Prison. And again, you can find more information about Uncuffed at yourcallradio.org. Nina and Eli, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks so much, Rose.
Thank you, Rose.
Thank you. Thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Calls Media Roundtable.